To call yourself an Angeleno, you must grasp your courage. Label yourself revolutionary, peacemaker, risk taker, pacemaker for the rest of the country.
Go public.
Slam poet Arlene Kumpa off the top. She added her voice to those of a mayor.
It is America's cities that are here ready to save Washington, D.C. And these are the laboratories of democracy. These are the places of innovation.
A dreamer.
More equality and not less equality. And this is really the question that's on the minds of the great thinkers of the planet today.
A doer.
Turn parking tickets from something people hate to something people hate a little less.
And a screamer.
I will provide all the vim and vigor I can.
And they were all talking about the intersection of data and the modern city. And so are we on this special episode of Go Public.
I'm a grinner, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. I play my music in the sun.
From governing and government technology, this is Go Public, stories of government getting it done.
Recorded live at the historic Millennium Biltmore in downtown Los Angeles. I'm Paul Taylor.
I'm Zach Patton.
And I'm J.B. Wogan.
We got together at the close of the 2018 Summit on Government Performance and Innovation, which attracted some 450 civic innovators and policymakers from cities across the country. Here's our recap.
So here at the summit, we have been talking about data in its many forms and manifestations, some that prompt conversation with citizens as part of citizen engagement. The most hopeful among the attendees talked about it in terms of story and civic stories. And on a more dystopian side, it went to issues of data in surveillance. You've been listening to this conversation over the last couple of days, Zach. What sense do you make of it?
I've been thinking a lot about data over the last day and a half, and Mayor Eric Garcetti, who was, you know, our opening keynote and sort of our one of our hosts here in Los Angeles, he kind of kicked everything off yesterday, just kind of underscoring the importance of data to him and his administration. He really said that for him, data is one of the key pillars of effective leadership.
There are many leaders who traditionally have looked at technology and change and been future phobic. I wish we could stop that. Or secondarily, your future passive, saying, well, it's going to happen anyways. And some people are really excited about that brave future. Some people are depressed about it, but don't have a role. We need to be future guiding, to embrace that technology and to use it and to shape it and to be a part of the architecture of it and the implementation of it to make sure it serves human beings.
This is a good year for Garcetti and the city he leads. Bloomberg Philanthropies named Los Angeles as the first city to earn its gold-level certification because of its impressive track record with data-driven initiatives. At the summit, we recognize Los Angeles as a high-performing city in the categories of data and resource allocation through the Equip to Innovate program, based on a framework developed jointly by governing and our partner, the nonprofit Living Cities.
You're never going to hear me say, that's a great idea, but test it someplace else and come back when it works. I believe all of us in cities should leap at those opportunities of new products, new policies, that we should be rewarded for failing forward, which is tough in a political environment. But it's almost what our people these days demand.
Los Angeles has been using data to help address everything from homelessness to road paving to gender equity in local government. He talked about their Firestat LA program, where they're using data to help speed up emergency response times. He talked about their CleanStat program. Of course, we love any sort of stat program at governing. But he talked about their CleanStat program, which is, I believe, the first citywide initiative in the country to measure the cleanliness of every single street on every single block. And then he talked, of course, about using data to tackle that most Los Angeles of problems, traffic.
He is also champion of the city's Mobility 2035 plan that is fundamentally remaking how the city moves, modernizing LAX, carving out bike lanes, making bus service faster, and making LA less of a car-centric city. Along with that, he is giving considerable attention to affordable housing, so much so that he becomes animated in a good way when talking about addressing homelessness. There is a subtext in all of this about whether and when there might be a path from the mayor's office to the White House for Garcetti. He spoke candidly with governing president Kathleen Robinette for a new podcast from governing.
In an ideal world, I'd see this term out.
I am at the same time really concerned about the country and the direction of the country, and I think purity of intention is really important. So mm-hmm. I'm looking at the 2018 elections to help change some of what we're seeing in terms of our Congress and representation, and considering in 2020 who I would support or maybe even jumping into to running for president.
You know, I think his answer was a little bit different by degree, not necessarily a full departure but from what he said elsewhere.
That podcast, called In the Arena, debuts in June. Garcetti was not the only larger-than-life personality at the summit. Steve Ballmer, the LA Clippers owner and former Microsoft CEO, spoke to the summiteers about his new philanthropic data startup, USA Facts.
Factual, unbiased. We decided the only way to do that was to only use government numbers. I believe in you. I believe in the people who are creating the data that we can use as a country to run. And any other number you can view as partisan because it doesn't come out of the good processes that are implemented at the federal, state, and local level around the country.
He is all about data, as you say, and his project, USA Facts, which we've written about online, is this, you know, large-scale effort to compile and to compare all of the ways that government collects revenue and spends money on programs at the state level, at the local level, and at the federal level, and kind of how those all overlap with each other. You know, he made a kind of impassioned plea for public sector leaders to engage in decision making based on numbers and on data. You know, I think with the crowd that we have here of kind of innovation officers and self-proclaimed government geeks, I think he was preaching to the choir. He was, you know, very much speaking their language. But he, you know, it really just, again, underscored this idea of data and numbers being used to power good government.
And people can say, oh, I don't want to know that. My mistakes, my flaws will be exposed. That may be true. That may be true. On the other hand, the only way we're going to get better is to have the data to be able to compare and to make decisions in a rational, informed way.
USA Facts takes this approach of creating the same kind of reports for government that corporations, publicly traded corporations, have to prepare to file with the federal government. Is there anything that that format misses?
That's a good question. People always like to talk about running government like a business. And there are some things that are just fundamentally different. I think about education. Education is a terrible business. You know, there's not, if you're running education as a profit business, you would do it very, very differently from how we run public education. So I think there are some nuances of that, but again, having this, starting from an informed place of data and numbers, I think is valuable no matter what.
JB, you spoke with Ballmer in the lead up to the summit about USA Facts. What did you make of that conversation?
Right now, USA Facts is really wedded to the idea of being nonpartisan, objective, not getting into the debates, and not actually calling people out. But you did notice that in Ballmer's preface for this year's annual report, he referenced fake news and alternative facts, and it'll be interesting to see if he and the project can resist, you know, fact-checking essentially when the facts that they're reporting are different from what politicians claim is happening in cities, states, or the nation as a whole.
And to your point, JB, fake news is just another artifact of everything gone digital. That was the message from Todd Richmond, the director of the Mixed Reality Lab at the USC Institute for Creative Technologies. He too spoke at the summit, casting a dystopian view of the near-term future.
But you ain't seen nothing yet because of the technological capabilities. What constitutes evidence has fundamentally changed, and that probably is not coming back. If a picture is worth 1,000 words, how much is a fake video worth? Probably a lot, it turns out, if it starts to trend. And that's the danger. The problem is that there's a much larger context. Your refrigerator is going to talk to your toaster, is going to talk to Amazon Fresh, is going to talk to the drone that's going to come drop the milk into your inside your front door. So all of our devices are starting to talk together.
And such is the technology environment in which policymakers have to make decisions and set direction. If USA Facts is about helping make sense of vast amounts of publicly available data, there are computing platforms that can help make linkages among data held by cities and other entities to improve service delivery and city operations. One such platform is Salesforce. While certainly not the only player in the government cloud, the company is taking a progressive stance on issues of gender, race, and identity. Its chief equity officer, Tony Proffitt, spoke to the summit.
Thinking, you think about the technologies that are out there driving this fourth industrial revolution, from robotics to machine learning to autonomous vehicles to artificial intelligence, literally it has the potential to free our imaginations. And it has the potential to allow humankind to realize its ultimate destiny or not. You know, it really, really depends on how the parties involved and the leaders involved and everyone involved stands up to their responsibility to make sure that fourth industrial revolution creates more equality and not less equality. And this is really the question that's on the minds of the great thinkers of the planet today.
Tony Proffitt brought a good dose of humanity in the name of equity and parity. That was kind of a compassionate human take on data. Does that help soften the edges of the business report?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to think about it. Tony Proffitt, the chief equity officer for Salesforce, and I think he's been there for about 18 months. And he did, you know, I think Salesforce is pretty far beyond where a lot of public governments are in terms of thinking about equity and incorporating decisions about, you know, race equity and gender equity into decision making. But I think it is a really necessary thing that people need to be thinking about. And I think it is certainly something that at least the folks at this event are keyed into. You know, doing that in an implementable way is a different conversation, but I think it's something that people are really starting to focus on.
Racial equity and data are two of seven elements in the EQIP framework that we mentioned earlier. 74 cities participated in EQIP this year, with Fayetteville, North Carolina, emerging as the most innovative city in the nation. That was a bit of a surprise in some quarters, but their win provided evidence that the model scales to fit both medium-sized and large cities. Also, it was proof that there are synergies to be realized across the seven elements.
As you said, Fayetteville, North Carolina is the top performer in this year's Equipped to Innovate survey. I think, you know, I think it was you yesterday, Paul, if I may quote you, who, you know, you were saying in that report, it wasn't that you would see one city do really well in one thing and then that was it. That was the only, you know, the only spike in their performance. It's like if a city does well on one of these seven categories, they are likely performing high on other ones as well. And so, yeah, I think it's all part and parcel of the same thing, that if you're paying attention to data, if you're paying attention to those numbers, it allows you to even know what you need to be looking at in terms of, for example, race equity.
JB, let's bring you back into the conversation. During the summit, you were busy interviewing people about ideas worth stealing. What were your favorites?
There are a number of cities that talked about blight and talked about data collection. The mayor of Gary, Indiana, for example, Karen Freeman Wilson, talked about how once they were able to get a better handle on the number of blighted properties that they had in their city, they were able to then prioritize which ones to work on first, and they have made some gains. It's not like they've eliminated blight, but data was the first step to addressing their problem.
We have an issue with vacant and abandoned properties. We didn't know how many, but we used data to, one, determine how many there were, but also to determine where will we concentrate our demolition and deconstruction efforts early on to get the biggest bang for our buck.
You know, sometimes when we talk about innovation is really just a dressed up word for saying we're trying things different. Patrice Hawkins from the Denver Peak Academy talked about how she's been really excited about other cities' efforts to use inclusion as a lens of approaching things differently, either doing it through an ordinance but basically, you know, when you're looking at a new policy, making sure that you're aware of what the race and social impacts are going to be, or the gender impacts are going to be of that policy, which is something that some cities and states are already doing, like Seattle. The last thing that came up a couple times, both the city of Syracuse and our number one rated equipped to innovate city, Fayetteville, both talked about citizen engagement and trying to do things differently in terms of how they go out and interact with citizens, and not just relying on the typical public meetings structure where you have the same old gadflies coming in and saying the same old things, but actually trying to find formats that work with the citizenry where perhaps they already our meeting, and instead of imposing questions, starting with asking what the citizens are interested in talking about and what they want to see happen.
We have our teams go out in the communities throughout the city, and there are a number of meetings, and we have the citizens prioritize what they would like to see. Instead of policymakers trying to guess and to diagnose problems, we are more problem solvers, and the citizens give us the input that we need to see what their wish list is. Because a lot of times their priorities are not aligned with ours, and so we make sure that our policies need to reflect what the citizens want.
And we'll have the link to JB's video and the story that goes with it in the show notes at gopublicpod.com. The people at the summit were all part of a common tribe. Steve Ballmer sensed that, and that they were his kind of people. We'll go out with his shout out to the summiteer.
This is my kind of crew. In this context, I like to say, after ninth grade, I went to math camp, and I think we got a few other math campers maybe in the room today. So go forward, verily, and let's improve government performance. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Paul.
And that will do it for us this time around. Sorry we were late with this one. The bad news, we got hit with some non-trivial technical problems, including a brownout at Op Podcasts. The good news, we've got a backlog of good stuff that we'll be rolling out beginning again in 2 weeks. Thanks for your patience. We'd love to hear from you. Just write podcast@governing.com. Always great to have you with us. Until next time, thanks for listening.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.